Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Final hour here, late night, Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you as we'll make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. The number to join us here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. We'll continue some of our Red Sox discussion, as well as I want to mix in some thoughts here on a Buckley article that he wrote for The Athletic, a pretty extended piece that he wrote for The Athletic yesterday, essentially going over the history of the WNBA and how it relates to Boston. And you might ask yourself, well, Gilroy, there is no WNBA team in Boston, which, by the way, is kind of a strange thing when you think about it. When you think about the Celtics and the success that they've had over the course of their history, you'd think that with a market like this, a rabid sports market like this, the WNBA would have wanted to put a team here, especially in their inaugural season. But Buckley goes through this entire timeline going back to the mid-90s, essentially explaining why the WNBA is not here. And you can blame it on the Gaston family. They were approached by the NBA, by David Stern at the time, when he was putting together the package, the thought, the idea of the WNBA, and they really wanted Boston to be one of the inaugural teams. The Celtics wanted to focus on getting the Celtics back to being the Celtics and didn't think that the WNBA would be a good fit at the time here in Boston. And here we are nearly 25 years into the WNBA's history, and the question is being asked once again, should the Celtics look at potentially adding a WNBA team if and when there's expansion in that league? And I say to you, the question really becomes, it's not so much whether the Celtics want to bring a team here. Is there demand for a team here? Is there a demand for a women's professional basketball team here in Boston? You know, call them the Lady Shamrocks for sake of the discussion, because all of these teams have some sort of a name affiliation with their parent NBA team. You know, would fans around here spend their entertainment dollars in the summer going to the Garden to watch basketball headlined by women? I'm not sure they would, and I'm not knocking the game, by the way. I mean, I'm a basketball junkie. I'm one of the few people that would. But so much of going to an NBA game these days is being about the stars, and it's about the whole entire entertainment package that the NBA brings to a game. It's an event in so many ways. It's a prepackaged event in the NBA. The WNBA is still very much about the basketball, and for that reason, I'm not sure that the WNBA would thrive in a market like this, where we're already so saturated with other professional teams that have got our interest for the entirety of the season. And by the way, the Celtics are one of those teams, not for nothing, but NBA free agency happens during the WNBA season, and I'm not sure the WNBA would even have the ability to have any sort of visibility here over the NBA's offseason because of how crazy and how rabid fans are really into the free agency and trades and how those things all happen, you know, in July on the calendar. That's peak time for the WNBA. But Buckley points it out, and he talks to David Stern. And David Stern, former commissioner of the NBA and the guy that was responsible for launching the WNBA, says that no, he wants to see a team in Boston sooner rather than later. Is that something that Celtics fans or basketball fans in general believe in? Do we think that the WNBA could thrive in this market? So we'll mix those calls in with you guys as well at 617-779-7937. Let's get back out to these calls. Let's go to Robert. Robert's in Rhode Island. Robert, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, how's it going?
What's happening, Robert?
Not much. I did have a point on the Red Sox, but if you could hold me with the WNBA, because I started listening when you were talking about that as well.
Sure.
But for the Red Sox, I'm just wondering why everybody has such high expectations after they just won a franchise record. I mean, how many years has it been since, what, 1898 the Red Sox has been around? It's like you guys won how many games last year?
And now everybody
expects you to win 108 games last year, and everybody expects you to win the same amount this year. It's
No,
I don't understand that.
I don't think anybody expects them to win the same amount this year, but you brought back 90% of the same team. The only real deficit you had was with the closer, and if you listen to their general manager, Dombrowski, in the offseason, he didn't think that this team would miss Kimbrel. He was confident that Brian Brazier was going to get the job done. And ultimately, he didn't. He got demoted to AAA today. And it's just amazing to me that that one move, the inability to replace Kimbrel, is really the first domino to fall in a series of dominoes that have fallen this season and have really pushed this team back to the pack.
But with that, he set up the dominoes last year with JD. I mean, last year he hit, what, 330, 43 home runs. You know, right now he's hitting 294, which is pretty good, but he's at 19.
Yep.
His long ball crushed the AL East last year.
But not this year. And so it's all, I mean, we can sit here and talk about last year.
It was a magical year is all I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great year. Everything that they did turned into gold last year. And nobody expects that to happen 2 years in a row, Robert. It's just my whole point is I want people to be sort of clear about what this team is this year, because there's still a huge segment of Red Sox fans that are waiting for last year to start to come up again and for this team to play like they did last year. And I don't believe that's going to happen. That's all.
Fair enough. If I could get to my WNBA point, if you don't mind.
Yep.
I think the way to get the WNBA in a better state, and it's never going to be, in my opinion, you know, close to the NBA, or maybe even not even close to MLS. I think you got to get like a Gino Auriemma. You know, I think you have to recruit the best coaches from the NCAA. I think that would be the way to go, like a Barbara Stevens, you know, a Muppet McGraw, somebody like that.
It's interesting, going back to, and whether it's a big-name college coach or even a celebrity type of name or a basketball mind that people sort of recognize, again, when the WNBA expanded in the early 2000s, they added a team to Chicago. And Dave Cowens was their coach, and he was the draw. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to get somebody on the bench that people recognize, and I think that could go a long way.
Yeah, you either need the name is slipping me right now. I believe she went to she plays in China right now, and she's the biggest draw in China. And she was the first, I believe, NCAA woman to dunk.
I know your point. I know who you're talking about, but what's your point with it?
You need the draw.
Yeah, you need the draw.
You need the draw, and you need several draws for one team to even be put on national TV.
And you're right about that, and that's part of the problem with the WNBA is, you know, when they first came out, everybody remembers the first pick was Rebecca Lobo, and she played for the New York Liberty. So she was the biggest star in college basketball in the mid to late 90s playing for UConn, and then she played in the biggest market, and that really helped propel the New York Liberty to a pretty good start to their franchise. You know, you had Lisa Leslie and you had Sparks playing for the Sparks, and you had, you know, these name recognition players back at the time. And I don't know if you have those right now. Sue Bird is like 40 years old playing out in Seattle. You know, she's another one that's been around forever. But with the WNBA, is there room in Boston for the WNBA to thrive? You know, there's the Ice Cube does the 3-on-3 league, it's men's basketball with a lot of professional NBA players, retired professional NBA players. This year, like Baron Davis is playing, Joe Johnson is playing, Big Baby Davis is playing, and they do a great job. But they're a traveling circus, is what they are. They don't have a home base. They travel a dozen different cities throughout the course of the summer. They play 3-on-3, and everybody that plays in that league, for the most part, played in the NBA. Corey Maggette, you've got significant players that have got championship experience. You've got coaches that are former NBA All-Stars. I mean, you've got guys out there like Dr. J as a coach. Gary Payton is a coach. Last year, Allen Iverson was a player coach. You've got real people in that league that are out there trying to make money and fill an audience and get a captive audience. They've got an FS1 TV deal, and they travel city to city for 12 weeks throughout the course of the summer. But what they are not asking is for one particular city to latch on to a group of three players for a 3-on-3 basketball league. They're not asking for Boston to fall back in love with Glenn Davis and, you know, Joe Johnson headlining the Boston Celtics version of their 3-on-3 team. No, they're not asking you to do that. I like the idea of the traveling circus. That way it comes to your town once a year, and it's an event. This year it's not coming to Boston. Last year it did. This year it's going to Providence. I'm going to go check that out because it's a cheap ticket to go watch quality basketball with names that I recognize and know. As a basketball junkie, that appeals to me. And as a basketball fan, and as somebody that is in the media, I realize that having a home base for this league, it would never work. The most brilliant thing that this league did was, instead of having each team attached to a city and they play their home games in that city, they've decided to go a completely different route and to do the traveling circus business model. That way, when they come to your city, it is an event. And they can travel this country, you know, season in and season out, year in and year out, without ever having to duplicate an arena if they didn't want to. There's so many places they can go play. And giving fans a unique chance to go watch players that they grew up watching, players that they grew up rooting for, and doing it on the cheap in a good entertainment type of venue. It's quality basketball, it's short money, and it's fun to watch. But one city doesn't have to sort of uphold an entire team, because I'm not sure the city of Boston would be able to do that. And I'm not sure the city of Boston would be able to hold up a WNBA team for an entire season, for 10 seasons, 20 seasons, 30 seasons, all on their own. I would like to believe that Boston could, but in my heart of hearts, I don't think that this city has what it takes to have a successful WNBA franchise sort of lay their groundwork here and grow roots here and eventually become a team that's been thriving in this city for 10, 20, 30 years. It is Sports Radio WEI. Let's grab another call before the break here. Let's go to John. John's in Florence. John, you next up here on WEI.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
Sure, John.
You're the only reason I listen to EI anymore, because they got rid of Jerry and Kurt and anything I would have wanted to listen to besides you.
I appreciate that, man. I really do.
I think they should make you do the morning show also. But I wanted to say that the WNBA doesn't make any money from the get-go. They couldn't even give away tickets. And the only tickets that they had were tickets that were bought by corporations, and they gave them away. And they don't fill up the arenas. They don't make any money. I don't believe they pay their electricity or any bills to, like, rent the arenas. It's like a donation from the pro teams that let them do it. So they don't make any money. So for all this talk of equality with the women's sports team, which is pretty hilarious, the women for basketball don't make any money. So I don't know how – I mean, they make money, but they don't make money for, like, the owners. So the only thing it would be good for is, like, a billboard you stick on the side of the highway, or when somebody tells you how much traffic you get after a commercial on something on the internet. That's all it would be good for is publicity to make you look good for having a team, because none of these teams make money. The only team I think might possibly make money, or that I've ever heard of making money, is the Mohegan Sun, the Connecticut Sun. And that's like women's college basketball too. Like, nobody cares about women's sports. Every single time I call into you guys and want to say, hey, you know, Diana Taurasi's got two drunk driving offenses, or Brittany Griner is a domestic violence abuser against her wife, who's also in the WNBA, who also got charged with domestic violence for the fight that they got in. And they all tell me, well, nobody cares about women's sports, and all we want to talk about is Ray Rice for the millionth time.
Yeah, it is a bit of a double standard there. You're right about that. You know, Ray Rice, he gets in trouble, or another athlete gets in trouble. It dominates the airwaves here for days. It absolutely does. But in the WNBA or women's professional sports as a whole, John, you're right. When those things sort of happen, it's in my trending for maybe an hour or two, but we don't talk about it. We don't get calls on it. And it doesn't sort of make the news cycle the way that it happens with big-name male professional athletes.
Yeah, like Hope Solo, she beat up her nephew in the garage, and then she attacked her sister-in-law, plus she had the drunk driving thing.
Yep.
And they never want to talk about those things. It's never an issue, and it's like, you're bad if you want to say something about it. It's like, I don't want to talk about any of it, except for, you know, that none of it should happen to anybody, men or women. Like, I remember a long time ago, there was an Angels pitcher that got beat up, like, by Tawny Katane, and everybody laughed about it. Or when Jim Brown got charged with smashing his wife's car that he bought for her with a baseball bat in his own garage, and they charged him with it. But I never heard anything about Elon Woods when she attacked Tiger Woods. In fact, it was just a big joke that she attacked his car with his golf club.
John, if the Celtics brought in a free agent with the criminal record of Hope Solo, that would dominate the airwaves here for weeks. You're 1,000% right about people and their unwillingness or inability to talk about it. And a lot of that has to do with the fact, John, that quite frankly, you don't have a WNBA team here. So bringing a Hope Solo here with her record would never happen. You know, it's not real to us unless it's happening to one of the teams that we care about with an athlete that we care about. But you better believe that if Kemba Walker were coming to the Celtics with the criminal track record of Hope Solo, we would still be talking about it 2 weeks after the transaction that brought him here, right? That's the facts. And those facts are 1,000% true. But all that being said, you know, you brought up the financial side of it. The WNBA, on average, loses $10 million a year as a league. But the NBA makes up the difference. It is supported by the NBA, and it's always going to be supported by the NBA. The WNBA is not going anywhere. The NBA prints money, and they can afford to sort of prop up this league. So with the understanding that being financially viable isn't really a be-all, end-all of the league. And you know what? They do a good job. In the smaller arenas, you brought up the Connecticut Sun. A, they do well there because of the success of UConn women's basketball. That is the mecca for women's basketball. If they couldn't succeed in Connecticut, they wouldn't succeed anywhere. But they do. But they also play in a smaller arena that holds about 9,000 people. You know, that's very different than coming to the Garden that holds nearly 20,000 people. So they've got the ability to have that arena for basketball, and they do a good job. If you fill up 6,000 people into a 9,000-seat arena, it looks relatively full, and that's important. By the way, that's one of the flaws that you have here with the MLS, playing in a 60,000-seat stadium in Foxborough. Unfortunately, if they draw 20,000 people, which is a nice crowd, the place looks empty. It is a perception problem that MLS has. But the WNBA, I love the fact that the Celtics were thought about as a team that should have a WNBA team. And this market, this city, was approached by David Stern in the mid-90s to have one of the inaugural WNBA teams. And if it hadn't been for the Gaston family that owned the Celtics at the time, maybe things would be different. You know, if Wick Grosbeck and Steve Pagliuca were approached back in the mid-90s, if they were owning the Celtics then, I think chances are a WNBA team would be here right now. And David Stern told Steve Buckley this week that he still believes that a WNBA team will eventually be in Boston, and he thinks it will be successful in Boston. I'm just not sure that it will be successful if and when one does come here, because I don't know if Boston sports fans, who are propped up on this belief that we are the most intelligent, best sports fans on the planet, I am not sure that we would be all that into spending our valuable entertainment dollars in the summer going to watch women's basketball at the Garden. I just don't see a scenario in which people actually want to do that. It is Sports Radio WEI. Look, if you're on the line, stay on the line. When we come back, I'll get to all your phone calls. We got plenty of time here. We don't get out of here till 2 o'clock in the morning. Room for you when we come back at 617-779-7937.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're here. The trolleys are just starting to pass us. I got some Poot Super fans here. Nancy, why'd you come out today?
Make some noise, Seattle! Yay!
Woo! What is it about this group of ladies that you love?
Oh my God, they're the heart and soul. I love to watch them. They play from their heart, and they give the city joy.
Seattle Storm fan right there. Just very excited. And you know, Seattle's a funny market because they love their basketball in Seattle. And the Storm have thrived since the Sonics left, but that's a rare sort of thing. You know, if the Celtics had a WNBA team here, then the Celtics suddenly moved towns, moved cities, and were taken out of Boston, and we were left with the female version. Maybe in that scenario, the fans here would start to spend their entertainment dollars on that sort of basketball because would be so sort of eager and hungry for any basketball whatsoever. Seattle had basketball for a long time when the Sonics left, and they were left with the Storm, and the Storm have done well. They've been a very good team, a championship team, and those fans have come through in groves. They've done a great job marketing that team in Seattle. But the idea of having a WNBA team here in Boston, I just don't buy into it. And it's not because I don't appreciate or don't like women's basketball. I do. But when I look at the fact that you've already got a team here in New England in the Connecticut Sun that, by the way, have no affiliation at all with the Boston Celtics, but they're here. They're, what, 60 miles away. So they're not far away. They play at Mohegan Sun Arena. So that's not a good situation for a WNBA team here in Boston to have competition essentially within the market. So you've got that part of it. So if somebody desperately wants to root for a WNBA team and spend their entertainment dollars rooting for a women's basketball team, you've already got that option here in New England, but David Stern former commissioner of the WNBA, in a piece that Steve Buckley did on The Athletic. He says that not only did the NBA approach Boston about being one of the inaugural cities for the WNBA, and it was something the NBA really wanted to happen here back in the mid-90s, still to this day, David Stern believes that this is the right market for the next WNBA team if and when they do decide to expand and you know, have an expansion team and expand their market, expand their reach in the WNBA into new and different cities, new and different markets. Talking about that with you guys tonight at 617-779-7937, because the question is really a question for you guys, the same people that listen to WEI, the same people that listen to 98.5, the same people that watch NBC Sports Boston. You guys are the Boston fans, the people that watch NESN. You guys are the people that the WNBA would be going after. So the question for you is a very simple one. If the WNBA team was to come here to Boston and the Celtics were to get sort of a female summer version of the team, would that be something that we were into? Would that be something that you guys would support by watching them on TV and listening to them on the radio and going to the games and spending your entertainment time and entertainment dollars supporting a summer women's basketball league here in this sort of city where we already have four major teams that we're so in love with? We spend so much of our entertainment dollars and so much of our entertainment time on, we don't even have room here in this market to support collegiate teams. We don't. So if we can't support our collegiate teams here in a way that other markets, other cities can, what makes people believe that we'd have the time, money, effort, energy, and desire to potentially support a women's basketball team here in this city? So we're talking about that with you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Let's get back out to the calls. Let's go to Brad. Brad's in Draycott. Brad, you next up here on WEI.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure, Brad.
So I just wanted to chime in first with the Sox really quick and then give my opinion on the WNBA situation in Boston. So I actually work for the Red Sox over at Fenway. So I'm down there every day with the fans, and I can visibly see the frustration on this fan base. You know, we have hope. I'm a huge Boston fan myself. I believe in this team, you know, till the end. But after games like this, you know, it's just really hard to see us making any sort of post-game appearance, and it's frustrating because we were so dominant last season. Everything was working. Everything we did was really bringing in wins and making miraculous plays. And it's just, I wish we made more off-season moves, especially in the bullpen. And that's clearly the primary issue here is on the mound. And especially with Chris Sale, you know, we gave this guy all the money in the world and he just can't perform right now. And it's, you know, I like Chris Sale a lot, but it's just frustrating to see the guy not being able to perform right now. And I think that's one of the biggest issues.
Brad, just a stupid question, but do you have, you said that you're a huge fan and you still have faith in this team. Do you have faith in this team because of your fandom and it's just blind faith? Or do you have faith in this team based on something evidence-based that you've seen this season?
I have faith in this team more so than just being a blind sports fan from Boston. You know, a lot of Boston fans, you know, we support our teams blindly. But I think based on what I've seen is offensively, we can come out there and we can hit the ball where we need to hit it when we have to. Not as often as we did last season, that is clear. But I think if we can just get the right guy on the mound when we need him there, and you were saying earlier how Cora is kind of clearly in desperation mode, and I totally agree with that.
Yep.
But, you know, I like to believe that he will make that right desperate move to get the guy that's going to throw the strikes to win us games and get us up into that first wild card spot.
Hey, man, I hope you're right. I really do. It's good. I'm a fan first, and that's why I'm here. I'm certainly not here doing the part-time overnight job to pay my mortgage. I do it because I'm a fan. So as a fan, I want you to be right. And as somebody who wants WEI to be successful, I want you to be right. The better the Red Sox do, the better our ratings are. It's good for everybody. I just, coming off this Celtics season and always waiting for tomorrow to be the day where things got better, I learned my lesson the hard way because tomorrow ultimately never came, and the Celtics were what they were all season long despite their payroll, despite their talent. They never morphed into the team that they had the potential to be, and I'm seeing a very similar pattern with this year's Red Sox.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. With the Celtics last season, I mean, I was never really a big Kyrie fan in the first place, so seeing the way that the team was playing and all the energy and how it was going, It was sad to see the way it ended up. I mean, we did our best, and we ended up where we kind of belong to at the end of the season. But I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, the young Celtics seeing what they're going to do. But just to get to my point on the WNBA in Boston.
Yep.
I love the WNBA. I love what it represents and what it means for female athletes everywhere. But I've tried watching it. I've tried watching the games, and like Connecticut, it's a great market for it. You know, they got UConn, the pinnacle of women's sports, I think.
Yep.
And it works great there. But it's just, they don't have in the WNBA what the NBA has in the celebrity status and the players. And I think that's what's bringing in the most viewers, is people want to see player versus player, not necessarily team versus team. You know, you got KD versus LeBron, you got Steph versus Kyrie, you know, you name it. I sign in to watch player versus player, not team versus team.
That's a great point. That's what the NBA has become in a lot of ways, and it's unfortunate because once upon a time, one of the things that I used to always preach, and my father preached it to me, was you root for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey. And I think people of my generation and older still continue to do that. But my kids, absolutely. You know, you root for players before you root for teams. I feel like rooting for teams and becoming a diehard fan of a team, that comes after rooting for your individual favorite players. And the WNBA, certainly, they don't have that right now because they can't market their stars the same way the NBA does. It just doesn't apply at this stage in the game. Maybe someday it will. But as of today, it just doesn't have nearly the same effect. Let's grab another call here before the break. Let's go to Mike. Mike's in North Providence. Mike, what's happening, man?
Hey, Patrick. Yeah, you know, I'm not a Kyrie fan either, like the previous caller. But with regards to the women's sports thing, in a larger sense, I'm not a WNBA fan. I mean, to me, it's high school basketball. That's the level, a good high school basketball team. I mean, I have a hard time thinking that there's any Division I teams out there that wouldn't absolutely drill a WNBA team. And certainly the Dukes of the world just obliterate them. And I know this watching it, and it just affects how I view it. I think it's like sloppy, inferior basketball compared to what I normally watch, which are the Boston Celtics, who are pretty sloppy, inferior themselves this year.
But, you know, Mike, and that's why I think what the Big Three League is doing, their model works, the traveling circus model, where, you know, they come to your town, they come to your city once a year. You're not asking a major market city to support a summer basketball team full of retired NBA players. But if you are a Big Baby fan, or if you're a Joe Johnson fan, and they're coming to your city, you can spend $30 and go once a year. That model works. And I think that's good for basketball. But, you know, putting a WNBA team here in Boston as the fifth major professional team, I just don't see a scenario where, you know, they're putting 50% of those people are going to those games, meaning 10,000 seats are going to be empty. I don't even see 10,000 people going to the Garden to watch these games on a regular basis.
See, the thing for me is there are women's sports that are compelling. I mean, of course, women's tennis. I'm a big women's tennis fan, have been. I remember in the early 2000s, Johnny Mack complaining that people weren't watching the men.
Watching the women.
Girls.
Yep.
Because the girls' game was more interesting than the guys' game. The guys' game had devolved into serve and volley and aces. And, like, you know, Pete Sampras boring me to death as he's winning Wimbledon, you know?
Yep.
Whereas the girls were fun. And that's the thing. I mean, in ice skating, they're fun. Actually, in MMA and in boxing, it's fun to watch them. You know, I mean, you have compelling athletes in there, and it like the previous caller was saying, you have stars.
Yep.
You have people that are personalities. I mean, in tennis, you have the Williams sisters, but not just them either. You know, there's a lot of personality there. You kind of get attached to these people. I grew up being a Gabriella Sabatini fan. People like that. This is the sort, and of course Steffi Graf. You know, it's these sorts of things where certain sports are definitely in their wheelhouse. And like I said, like ice skating, you know, when it comes to figure skating, they're the boss.
Yep.
When it comes to gymnastics, like, you ever see the movie, the Bronze, where,
yep,
you know, the girl from the Big Bang Theory, and it's like a girl's bronze is worth a men's gold.
Yep.
It's the truth.
You're right about that.
You know, I mean, there are sports out there where the girls' side actually gets the most attention. It's just that the WNBA, I don't think ever will be, because the way this game is played, when you watch them play it, it's just nowhere near as compelling. And I couldn't imagine any of them being anywhere near the level of any of the top NBA stars as being a gate the way the Serena is in tennis.
So,
you know?
Real quick before I have to cut you off here, Mike, the over-under came out in the Celtics today, 48.5 wins. What do you think?
I think that's perfectly fine. You know, here, just as a parting thought, right? Just think about the fact that this year, with it being able to funnel the shots at the top four, simply any one of those guys, but particularly Brown and Tatum now, will be allowed to get hot, where it won't be, oh, now it's somebody else's turn. Yeah, you hit three shots in a row, but you won't get to touch the ball for the next 6 minutes.
Right.
You know, which happened time and again to them last year. This year, with there being more order, you know, clearing out the roster a bit, it will allow them to breathe and it will allow them to be good. And honestly, I mean, that's the secret. That's part of the secret sauce of winning the NBA. If you have multiple good players, any one of them can carry you to victory if any one of them gets hot.
Awesome, Mike. I appreciate the phone call. And I think that they're pretty dead on as well at the 48.5. I just find it awesome. Yeah, I've listened to Ordway for the last month tell me the Celtics are going to take a major step back from who they were last year. Well, last year they were a 49-win team that got essentially swept out of the second round of the playoffs. That isn't all that good to me, and I don't think that it's much of an overreach to think that they could be as good as they were last year. And apparently people that know much more about basketball than I do and much more about basketball than Glenn does agree with me, because 48.5 versus 49 tells me that they're projected to be about the same as they were last year, meaning the decline, the big step back that Ordway thinks is going to happen is never going to happen.
Hey, Pat, real quick question, maybe a one-word answer. Do you think the WNBA would outdraw the Revolution in this town?
No, I don't. The Revolution do okay in this town. The problem the Revs have is they play in a 50,000-seat stadium, so it always looks empty. But they get 12 to 20,000 people there, depending on the opponent. If we built a soccer-only stadium here, like other markets have had, with 15,000 people, the perception would be very different because it would be sold out night in and night out.
Aren't they doing that in the Seaport?
They're doing some of it in the Seaport, but they're only at this point doing some of the games there. So, you know what I mean? Right now, they still play a majority of their games in Foxborough. So that whole perception problem that you've had for the last 10 years as well playing in Foxborough it's never going to go away. The image that you get in your head of that place looking relatively empty, I don't think is ever going to change. But people do go. And especially in this town, think about all the people that are here that have immigrated to Boston from major soccer countries. That also really helps the MLS here in this town. It is Sports Radio WEI. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls and give some final thoughts here right here, Sports Radio WEI.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Final segment here, late night. Sports Radio WEI. I'll tell you, it's been a fun show tonight. And this WNBA talk, I didn't know if it was going to take off, but it did, which just tells me that my question was answered. I haven't heard one positive take here, one fan that believes that if the Celtics were to entertain the idea of expanding the WNBA into Boston, as was asked of them back in the mid-90s, and David Stern telling Steve Buckley this week that he still wants this done, he still thinks that this is something that should happen and that Boston should have a WNBA team. With all the calls we took in the last hour about this, not one fan advocated for the idea of some sort of summer professional WNBA team here in Boston. And so I think my question has been answered, and answered pretty definitively. But it is Sports Radio WEI. Let's grab another call here before I get out of here. Let's go to Paul. Paul's in Westfield. Paul, you're going to wrap up the show here tonight. Paul, what's on your mind, man?
Well, I'll tell you what's up, Pat. Finally. Achtung, Haliki, Geld. Attention, holy money. Der Zeit von Wechseln, Glauben ist gut. The time for change in belief is good. Patrick, we have not recognized.
Is that Latin? I don't know.
No, it's German.
It was German.
To our German fans, because we're about to remind everyone that the Women's World Cup set a World Cup record. 26 goals, beating Germany's 25. They matched Germany's two World Cups in a row over 8 years, and quite possibly based upon the talent and the youth and what they dominating performance, they could set an all-time record with three World Cups. They had the French in the French stadium against the French with more American fans, a nice soundbite. They got 4 million as opposed to 34 million for the men. Pat, let's settle this once and for all. What is the issue with the men getting 20,000 in the stadium year round for years in the World Cup every 4 years, but they got 34 million but didn't even qualify? How do those numbers work out? What am I missing?
Well, you're asking me to do math, and it is 1:54 in the morning, Paul. And, you know, I'll tell you what, it's simply a matter of men's sports draw a TV on TV better than women's sports do. So we look at the fans and the stands, and that's one aspect of it, Paul. Listen, I appreciate the phone call, but I'm up against it here. But as far as television viewing audience goes, historically speaking, you know, more people are going to tune into men's games more frequently. So while the women's may be an every 4 year big draw, and that's what they become, right? Every 4 years, people go all in. You've got a lot of pride in your country driving the audience, driving the ratings, driving the television appearances, driving all of that. All that goes away, which is why ultimately, you know, these things aren't sustainable to the point where if women's soccer isn't going to be the next big sport here in Boston or here in the United States of America. Don't forget, it was the World Cup back in the early 90s that got the MLS started here. And while the MLS has been all right, it was nothing compared to the soccer fever that was really going through New England during the early 90s World Cup. Two completely different things, because one's a one-off every 4 years, and the other one is something you have to buy into on a week-in and week-out basis. So it is Sports Radio WEI. This has been Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Good news for everybody. Great news for everybody. I know I've been traveling a lot lately, but I'm back here tomorrow night. We get to do this all over again tomorrow, following another exciting Red Sox game that'll probably take 4+ hours. But whenever the Red Sox are done tomorrow, I'll be back here again tomorrow night. Looking forward to that. We'll get to a lot of good stuff, including some takes on the Celtics that I didn't have a chance to get to tonight. All that and more. Stay tuned. It's SB Nation Radio. That comes your way next, right here on Sports Radio WEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.